WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. There's been a shooting at the megachurch of Pastor Joel Osteen in Houston, Texas. Lakewood Church posting on social media that it is an active situation involving shots fired. Houston police are responding as we hear from one of the churchgoers.
Well, I was just walking up the stairs, and when I got on the top, like, they started shooting.
ABC's Jim Ryan has more.
The 2 p.m. Sunday service at Lakewood Church is conducted in Spanish, and members were just settling in when someone started shooting. Kayla Jack climbed under the pews for cover.
First, we hear one, and then we're like three, one, two, three, and then start shooting maybe 10 shots.
A tweet from Harris County Sheriff Ed Gonzalez says that, quote, a possible shooter is down, shot by one of our deputies. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
The church's statement goes on to ask for people to pray for Lakewood and for its community. This is ABC News. The reward is now up to $80,000 for the gunman wanted in the fatal shooting of a deputy during a routine traffic stop in Tennessee. ABC's Phil Lipoff reports.
On Thursday night, police say deputies pulled Kenneth DeHart Jr. over for erratic driving in Blount County, nearly an hour from Knoxville. Police say when he refused to get out of his vehicle, the deputies deployed a stun gun. They say DeHart then pulled a gun, opening fire. Both deputies shot, the suspect able to get away. Deputy Greg McCowan pronounced dead, his body escorted to a funeral home by dozens of fellow officers.
The suspect's brother and girlfriend were arrested overnight, charged with being accessories after the fact. The NTSB and the FAA are now investigating a helicopter crash in California that killed six people, including the CEO of one of Nigeria's biggest banks on Friday night. NTSB member Michael Graham says the chartered flight took off from Palm Springs and was headed to Boulder City, Nevada. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
Finding the special health care resources families need just got easier. Wisconsin Wayfinder, Children's Resource Network, helps kids with delays, disabilities, special health care needs, and mental health conditions. Call toll-free 877-947-2929. Ask questions, get answers. Connect today toll-free 877-947-2929. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Hopes for reviving the expanded federal child tax credit got a big boost when the plan recently passed the U.S. House. If it eventually becomes law, advocates for low-income families say it would go a long way in fighting poverty. Here's Mike Mohn.
The U.S. House passed a bipartisan tax bill that includes a three-year expansion of the child tax credit. Analysts say it isn't as robust as the one-year expansion from 2021, but a key provision would allow families with little or no income to gain eligibility. Tim Smeeting, a retired economist with the University of Wisconsin, says it could allow struggling households to address a big expense they haven't been able to cover.
You can pay heating bills that you've let go because you know that the utility won't shut you off.
He says eliminating those debts frees up money for families to spend on children's needs. Despite bipartisan support in the House, the bill faces an uncertain future in the Senate, with pushback from both Republicans and Democrats. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities estimates that in the first year, expanding the child tax credit would lift as many as 400,000 kids above the poverty line. The center's Chris Cox says while there are calls to bring back the original expansion, this bill would still make a difference.
Half of kids who don't get the full credit now, their families will gain $600 or more from the bill. And about 40% of kids who don't get the full credit now, their families will gain $1,000 or more from this bill.
Bill sponsors hope to get final approval so qualifying households could claim the credit on this year's taxes. Cox says if you file earlier, the measure instructs the IRS to make good on your return. Wisconsin has an earned income tax credit, but the state is often cited as having a regressive tax structure that hurts low-income households. Experts say the federal plan would ease that burden. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With weather on the Eagle, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, mid-20s. Sunshine with a high in the low 40s on Monday. For Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 26. Tuesday, partly sunny, near 40 degrees and into the mid-40s on your Wednesday. Some rain by Wednesday night.
Currently, 42 degrees.
This is the talk you can't ignore, even if you tried.
Why is everyone ignoring me?
Find out why all of lacrosse is talking about Eagle 1490.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Up first on this weekend's edition of Civic Media Spotlight, we head to the network's newest daily show, Busted Pencils, for a conversation surrounding the shortage among special education teachers.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, I see you, man. You look great. How are you doing, hey, my friend?
Doing all right. Doing all right. It's Tuesday, you know, second day of the work week. So, you know,
this is our normal day, right? Typically, right? We've been doing Tuesdays for what, 5 years now, and here it is, you know, Tuesday. But we were on Monday last week. In case you're wondering what we're talking about, it's Busted Pencils 5 days a week now, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Check it out. And if you're somewhere else, you know, make sure you're out there, download the Civic Media app. That way you can listen to us wherever you are on your phone. Johnny, great guest, great show tonight. We have covered, though, this topic. We're getting a little bit more in depth. Hey, news out there to the world. There's a teacher shortage right now. Just in case anybody hasn't been paying attention, and that would be you, my neighbor, who we're talking to. My neighbor, there's a teacher shortage. However, Johnny,
who knew?
Who knew? But before we get to our guest, I know producer Anya has queued up a piece. We're going to listen to a little segment here.
7.5 million American students, or roughly 15% of them, have disabilities that qualify them for special instruction, what's known as individual education plans. But teachers trained in this critical area are in short supply. At the beginning of the current school year, 70% of schools surveyed said they had openings for special education teachers. We asked special education teachers and administrators to tell us how the shortage is affecting them.
You're spread thin, you know, and you're working with a student on a lesson to meet their academic goals, but you're also thinking about the student behind you who's working on maybe feeding or they're getting their medications, and you're thinking, how can I support that student when I'm working with another?
There it is, Johnny. Special education teacher shortage. Well, let's get to our guest. Our guest, she has broad expertise in the preparation of teachers who work with students with disabilities and providing instruction to students with disabilities to improve their long-term academic and social behavioral outcomes. She is currently the Director of Teacher Education and Certification Officer for UW-Madison, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson. Kimber, how are you?
I am doing well. It's so nice to be here.
It's so nice to see you, man. It's been a while. I, you know, Johnny Kimber and I, you know, used to in the Wisconsin, you know, made some noise at the time.
Hey, look great.
So, Kimber, that was from the piece that was on, I think it was National Public Radio, where they're talking about this. Kimber, there's a teacher education shortage. Lay it out for us, like, what's happening, why, what's going on, first response, what do we do? That's what's going to be the whole show, so you're not going to obviously answer all those questions. But, Kim, how did we get to a special education teacher shortage?
Well, there has always been a special education teacher shortage. So, you know, special education became, mandatory in public schools in the 70s. And even from the beginning, there were not enough teachers to fill the openings. And there were certain kinds of, assignments within special education that had the most kind of chronic shortages. So any job where people were going to work directly with kids with, significant needs, kids with emotional, behavioral kinds of challenges, those were positions that people were least likely to want. Right. They left them quickly. So there's always been this kind of this clawing around trying to find people to fill these positions. And then, in the last 10 years, as there's been more of a, shortage, and I put that in air quotes, but
yeah,
as there have been less, teachers interested in staying in their jobs or less people entering the field, that's kind of hit special education even harder. Right. So it was the position that people were less interested in from the beginning, and then, just hit harder within all of this.
I like the way that, but there's always been a shortage of special education teachers. And you point out, though, too, because it's hard work. And all teaching, and Johnny and I are going to say all teaching's hard work. But special education, it's hard work, and people potentially looked and said, yeah, I saw that as a potential opportunity for me when I was learning to be a teacher. And I said, no, I can't do that. That's not my passion. That's not where I see my ability to do my best work. But boy, I can see people who get in there and go, like, they need to be there. They're the best. And you think about, these are our children who, they have the significant needs. Let's be honest. It's crisis, isn't it, Kimber?
I'd say it feels that way in many schools and districts. Yes. I was just going to say this issue of, I do think there's, in some ways, special ed always has a PR problem, and that might extend to the general society and the way we think about disability. That people see something as being very challenging instead of thinking, well, this is just the spectrum of way people present in life. And, we don't necessarily have to treat people with differences all that differently, but of course there is specialized knowledge. And of course there are, skills and, things that people need to know about the law. So I'm not suggesting that it doesn't take some kind of specialized knowledge. And I'm not suggesting that there might be some people with certain personalities or, ways of approaching difference that might make them better for the job. But I do think, I feel like it's almost like a PR problem for disability, combined with a PR problem for being a teacher. Right.
Well, there's so much in that, the way you say it's just, okay, special education. I could, right now I could see my neighbor going, oh, those kids. Well, yeah, I don't know who's going to work with those kids. Or I remember those kids, or, hey, I used to hang out with one of those kids. Johnny, did you have any of those kids in your classrooms?
Absolutely. But I've taught both in special education classroom and then in what we called at the time mainstreamed. Coming back to this, I think, you're both talking about this crisis on top of a crisis, and it's a larger understanding of how we in general approach becoming a teacher, right? And the certain dispositions and the certain ways, from go, we also, within even our own programs, Tim, we talk about this a lot, right? We separated out special education and education and regular education as though there's this mystical different thing that happens. And Dr. Wilkerson talked to this, there are certainly things that special educators, I even hate that term, right? Except they absolutely are superstar educators, right? But the idea that
that we've set up this separation or this exclusionary way of understanding what's required of being a great teacher. And fortunately for myself, I mean, I didn't realize that some of the best teachers that would mentor me as a new teacher and as even a veteran teacher always learning were special educators, but a different kind of focus from experts who were teaching them to be teachers through a lens I wish we all had. And Dr. Wilkinson brings us this tremendous ability to discern and embrace and value difference. Right. I truly believe that, and I hate these terms special education, that really good special educators and special education programs make the best teachers. And it's not easy, but they do a great job because the capacity to handle that we have learners with different needs, that some we can see those different needs, some we have to learn about them, but we have to have flexibility and capacity to understand those differences and to value them and to value that there is a person learning in that classroom. There is always a person first learning, and that, you know, we've somehow, again, like we've picked on schools for a long time, sorted it out in a way that doesn't quite exactly make sense for all that we know about how we ought to live together in communities, in families, and that's why I know the terms are really problematic, but I really enjoy teaching it was kind of called a mainstreamed program because we had the supports. We had special educators and regular educators. We had good educators working together. We had supports that made our classroom communities more like the communities we were realistically not only living in, but wanted to be living in, where we embraced one another as members of our classroom community with those differences.
I wonder if this is though too, maybe a little bit of terminology here. Kimber, IEP, okay, and Johnny was talking about, you know, differences in students. IEP stands for what?
Individualized Education Program. And so essentially this is a document, right, that lays out what this individual kid needs that is going to be different or distinct or, you know, additional to what every other student, whether you call that regular or you call that general, you know, like whatever you call those, that classroom of students, typical. So if a student needs something additional, an adaptation, a modification, a change, they need some special services, they need access to a speech language pathologist, they need access to adaptive equipment, you know, all different kinds of things they might need. And those are laid out in that document, that individualized education program.
Well, and the way you said it too, I think for people to understand the spectrum or the continuum of recognizing, you know, what is special education? Well, it could be an intellectual issue. It can be physical. It can be physical and intellectual at the same time. But recognizing what we said is that there are differences, and that some children have a little bit more of an emphasis, I'd say, on some of those differences that requires teachers with a specialized knowledge to be able to look at, work with, develop that individual education plan, because that individual has those needs a little bit above and beyond, quote, the classroom. And so
Busted Pencils is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings at 7. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Valentine's Day is here. This year, give the ultimate gift. Name a star after your sweetheart. This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For 45 years, we have named millions of stars for celebrities, dignitaries, and individuals worldwide. For $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can give the most memorable gift. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
It's Fully Leaded Education Talk.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny, weeknights at 7 on the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM WLCX, and on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Arbol Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We now head down to southeastern Wisconsin for the Don Rosen Show, where Don had a conversation with Mark Hertzberg and Lee Wissow about bringing a dedicated ICE center to Racine County. Enjoy.
It's 7:07 at WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen. Thanks for joining us here on a, I would say confused, Tuesday morning. You know, it's written on the screen Tuesday, and I sit here every morning. I wonder what day it is. Mark Hertzberg is here. Thank you very much, Mark. Mark is the secretary, and it's the Racine County ICE Center. Got that right. You're the secretary, but we got the chairman. The campaign chairman is here, too. Lee Wishaw is here. And thank you guys for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
And Mark is so authentic. He's actually wearing a New York Rangers hockey jersey, which is really good. You know, the Admirals are still here in town, right? They still in Milwaukee?
They are. Okay. Yes. They're a farm team, I think, for the Nashville Predators.
Oh, are they now? Okay. Yeah, because they were, what was the name of the league they were in at one time? It's
the American International Hockey. Oh, International.
The International Hockey League.
Yeah, they were in USHL years ago, and then the International League, and then now the AHL.
Turn that thing toward you a little bit there.
Yeah, and Racine's Craig Leopold was the first owner of the Nashville Predators.
Okay. Yeah. I love hockey. Hockey's a fast-moving sport. I love to watch it. When I lived on Long Island, we used to go to the Islanders games all the time. Or occasionally went into the garden to go watch the Rangers in the city, which was always fun. Okay, so we're talking ice rink here. Now, people say, gee, don't we have an ice rink in town? Well, if you think we have an ice rink or an ice skating center in town, you haven't looked lately. We used to have one at Festival Hall.
There are two ice skating facilities in Kenosha County. When our boys and I played hockey, we had to go to Kenosha. When I coached one of our sons, 5 o'clock Sunday morning, we had to go. Milwaukee has several facilities.
Well, the one at the State Fair Park is huge.
Right. Yeah. There's Wilson Park, and Waukesha County has got several facilities. There's nothing in Racine County. And what we want to do is to have a year-round ice skating facility. We've been working with the county for more than 4 years on this, and we hope to have this open in a couple years, probably in Franksville. And this is something for year-round recreation. It's a recreation opportunity that's not available in our community now. People have to go out of town. They have to spend their money out of town, take advantage of this. This is something that's going to bring dollars into Racine County as we host tournaments and competitions. And it's also going to be an important recruiting tool for companies. As they look at people who are considering jobs here, some of the people are going to say, well, can I take advantage of ice sports in Racine County? Do I want to relocate to Racine County?
Now, well, let me ask you, is it where the park is? Is that what you're talking
about? That is a likely location, okay. If not possibly Haben Park, which is also out in the Franksville area. But, you know, one of the county considerations as to why Racine County should be the magnet for ice sports for our residents. There's somebody that our kids grew up with. I played hockey with them, and their sons now play hockey. They live in Mount Pleasant. Their parents pulled them out of Racine Unified, and the kids now go to school at Kenosha Unified because Kenosha's got a varsity hockey team.
Now, if you build one out in Franksville, you got to start from scratch. There's no building out there for this, right?
Correct.
So you got, it's, what kind of money are you looking at to build one of these things?
Well, we is RCIC. We're a 501c3. We self-funded, there's no county money in this part of it, a feasibility study. We sent out proposals to three nationally recognized feasibility study companies. And we spent $70,000 of our money. And the feasibility study says that this is doable and it will be successful. It would be successful.
Now, is there a lot of interest from the
public?
There
is. That's part of the feasibility study. And you asked about where we are. We had an estimate of $13 million for a single sheet ice facility. And ideally, we would like two sheets of ice, but we would build it.
Now, what does that mean, two sheets of ice? What does that
two mean? Rinks.
Okay.
Two skating surfaces. And we had an estimate of $13 million. So we committed to raise $8 million, and we have a memorandum of understanding with the county that we hope the county board supervisors will approve, where the county would bond $5 million. We have self-upped our ante to $10 million. We've pledged to raise $10 million. And so even though the county would be responsible for hiring the designers, the architects, the builders, and then the county will hire a third party to manage the rink, we are going to raise two-thirds of the money for this county facility.
Have you begun yet?
We have.
Okay.
And Lee can speak as to where we are, but that's unheard of, I think, for a county facility to have two-thirds private funding.
Now, where will this? Now, I know the one at State Fair Park is an Olympic training facility. Is that the size, though, you're looking at, or smaller than that?
That is a two-sheet facility, two okay. ice sheet facilities, plus there's a speed skating oval that circles that facility, and it is a massive building. We're not looking at a building quite that size. We mm-hmm. will not be putting in a speed skating oval.
Okay, so what happened to the one at Festival Park? Because when I first moved here in 1980, that was an active ice skating rink. People skated there. Now it's just an empty place they could put, you know, vendors and stuff for different events coming to town.
It was very, very successful. It was packed. I don't know if there was a problem with the design, but, excuse me, the refrigeration system failed. And the predecessor to RCIC was close to having a rink in Pritchard Park about 25 years ago. And there was an estimate of $300,000 to fix the refrigeration system. And then Mayor Jim Smith said, I'd rather put that money into the year-round facility in Pritchard Park. And our facility was approved by the county board. The bonds were going to be sold on a Monday, Friday before then-Governor Scott McCallum ended shared revenue, and the county executive took the bond sale off the table. So the facility didn't happen in Pritchard Park, and the city didn't fix the one in Festival Park.
Is it fixable now, or is it so far gone you couldn't do anything?
It's been so long, nobody's talked about it, but you would rather put the money into a year-round facility that can accommodate sports.
Yeah, that was only for the winter use
right.
at Festival Park.
And you couldn't play hockey. There wasn't much that you could do on there other than skate. I mean, skating was important, and it introduced a lot of people to skating.
Now, that looked big to me. It just maybe because I'm not used to seeing big rinks, but that looked big to me.
It was tiny.
It was tiny, but,
okay. yeah.
but we had a tinier one. Actually, we're going to talk about this in just a moment. In Monument Square, they tried to put an ice rink. And I saw it when I drove by. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mark Hertzberg is here, and Lee Wishaw is here. And we're talking about the Racine Ice Center project they're working on. More coming up in just a moment here at WRJN Radio. Stay right where we are. Civic Media Station, Hometown Radio Refreshed. It's 719.
The Don Rosen Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WRJN weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Talk about lacrosse in Wisconsin
without the yelling and screaming.
These are real conversations about things that affect you. This is Eagle 1490.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dabusky.
There's been a shooting at the megachurch of Pastor Joel Osteen in Houston, Texas. Lakewood Church posting on social media that it is an active situation involving shots fired. Houston police are responding as we hear from one of the churchgoers.
Well, I was just walking up the stairs, and when I got on the top, like, they started shooting.
ABC's Jim Ryan has more.
The 2 p.m. Sunday service at Lakewood Church is conducted in Spanish, and members were just settling in when someone started shooting. Kayla Jack climbed under the pews for cover.
First, we hear one, and then we're like three, one, two, three, and then start shooting maybe 10 shots.
A tweet from Harris County Sheriff Ed Gonzalez says that, quote, a possible shooter is down, shot by one of our deputies. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
The church's statement goes on to ask for people to pray for Lakewood and for its community. This is ABC News.
Marquette with another win.
Hi,
I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In college basketball, Marquette beat St. John's 86-75. The Golden Eagles have now won 7 in a row. Another shocking loss for Wisconsin, this time to Rutgers, who beat them by 22 points, 78-56. Great defense by the Scarlet Knights. The Badgers now with a 4-game losing streak. I'm in Las Vegas covering Super Bowl 58, where the 49ers are looking to win the Lombardi Trophy for the first time since 1994. Quarterback Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant in the draft, says,
it's sort of been like the story of my life, you know, sort of being overlooked, you know, throughout high school, not a high recruit or anything, and life sort of repeated itself. I got drafted last.
Chiefs trying to make it back-to-back championships. Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I think just the opportunity to have a back-to-back championship. I mean, I got close a couple years ago and fell short. So just being able to be back on this stage and just having that opportunity and trying to make sure that we maximize that moment.
That's Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. From Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas, I'm Mike Clemens.
With weather on the Eagle, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, mid-20s. Sunshine with a high in the low 40s on Monday. For Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 26. Tuesday, partly sunny, near 40 degrees and into the mid-40s on your Wednesday. Some rain by Wednesday night.
Currently, 42 degrees.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s, time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Broadcasting from the Eagle's Nest. With everything lacrosse is talking about. You're soaring with Eagle 1490.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You are listening to the Civic Media Spotlight, where we recap segments from around the Civic Media Radio Network this past week. Up next, we head to Wausau and the Chad Holmes Show. Chad was joined by Yi Leng Zong of the Hmong American Center and a member of local government in Marathon County for a conversation about what's going on in the community. To hear the entire interview, you can check out the podcast for the Chad Home Show on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, or wherever you find your podcasts.
And welcome back, Chad Home Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. The time is 8:35. Currently, overcast skies, 33 degrees is the temperature here in downtown Wausau. And very happy to welcome Yi Leng Zong, Hmong American Center, D.C. Everett School Board, Marathon County Board, back to our program. But welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Chad.
There's a lot to talk about. And I was just saying to you before we started that one reason that I'm very impressed with what you've been able to do within our community is that our whole radio organization, we got stations around the state of Wisconsin, and our owner, Sage Weil, believes so much in democracy. And the only way democracy works is if people get involved and people are engaged, whether it is through elected office or whether through organizations or whether just being a citizen that's involved. And yourself, you have these different hats that you wear. And I was saying that you have the school board where the focus number one is, of course, great education for the kids, trying to make them the best citizens they can be as they go into their lives. Then you got the county board, which, of course, has all the issues around Marathon County, and the Hmong American Center as well. Is it a part of a master plan of yours, or is it something that just, hey, here's an opportunity to be involved, I want to be involved?
Yeah, thank you, Chad. You know, as you mentioned here, one of the things I value the most is community involvement, community service, and being an individual who gives back to our community, especially to the home that's been able to give us so much things as well, to making us making the American dream possible for me and my family as well too. So this is one way that I've been able to give back to my family by mentoring, by serving DC School Board, giving back to our kids, to our children, to our students, the future leaders of the community here, serving on the county board, being a advocate for rural America or rural Wisconsin, serving our farmers, and then in my role as the executive director at a nonprofit here, I'm stretching every dollar that I can here, but at the same time making as much impact as possible to our underserved community or the Southeast Asian community, specifically the Hmong community here, by finding other revenues, other income streams to bring back to Central Wisconsin here and serving the low-income community here. And I'm just so thrilled to be able to make an impact in the way that I am. Although I've never done this for awards or recognition, I've done this because I truly, sincerely love our community.
It truly is, I think, an example of true democracy in action, because the system doesn't work unless we are truly involved. So I absolutely, wonderful aspects to your life and career up to this point. Let's start off with the Hmong American Center. I wanted to kind of not assume that people, you know, knew what the Hmong American Center is. Maybe there's listeners out there that have not been familiar. Executive Director, could you talk a little bit about what the Hmong American Center is, what its goals are, and maybe some of the activities you're involved with?
Yeah, so the Hmong American Center was originally established to help the Southeast Asian community, assimilate into the community here. Although, you know, the discussion about a melting pot is something that our community always, or America always talks about, we like to look at this more of a salad bowl, you know, because obviously salad's a lot more healthier than anything that's melted, right? But, you know.
Man, you're always thinking, I tell you.
So the salad bowl here, we want everybody to be kind of part of the whole bowl, you know, that we together, that individually we have our own characteristics, our own uniqueness, but together we serve as a community as a whole. So the Hmong American Center serves in that realm here to provide resources, to provide education and leadership and collaboration to the Southeast Asian community and the community at large, just educating our community and also helping serve the underserved community. We focus on six pillars of services in our community here: economic development, workforce development, education through cultural preservation through education, equal access to health care, and then we have services for elders and youth, and then we have our community empowerment, which includes direct client services. So direct client services includes housing, includes assistance with energy assistance, immigration, and so much more. It basically is general aid in our community because we fill in that gap, you know, that the other communities are not able to serve. One of the things that I think is very important to note that We love to let the community know about the available resources in our community. So we do have a resource fair that's happening this week, Friday, from 4 to 8 at NTC, which will be a location for community members to be able to come by and be able to learn about the available resources that's in our community here, but also about the Hmong American Center as well. And most importantly here, you know, as it was announced earlier this week here, we did receive a large grant as well, too, from the local food purchasing grant, which will then allow us to purchase food or produce from our vendors, our farmers, farmers market, specifically from the Southeast Asian community here, to basically distribute back to community at large. And these food and produce are specifically Southeast Asian catered. So we're so excited about the numerous things that are coming ahead here.
That's very interesting about Friday's event at NTC. And whether you're a member of the Hmong community or a member of any part of the community, there are a lot of things that we don't know about. And I imagine it even takes it to a next step for the Hmong community, because often there could be barriers in terms of language and just not being as familiar with some of the opportunities. And there's nothing worse than having something that's out there, that's an opportunity that could help people's lives, and that's not knowing about it. So I imagine that part of what you do at the Hmong American Center is just that, letting people know about what is out there in terms of opportunities to get education, whether it's financial benefits, anything out there, correct?
That is definitely correct here. We also actually have seen an increase in not just Southeast Asian individuals coming to the Hmong American Center, but we've seen Hispanic, we've seen our new neighbors, but then we also see General Wazonian as well, too, showing up as well, too, for services and assistance as well, too, and we're able to connect them with other resources that exist in this community as well, too.
Again, we're talking to Yi Leng Zhang of the Hmong American Center, the Marathon County Board, and the DC Ever School Board here on Bow Falls Radio. I wanted to ask you, because within that group, and when we talk to groups like yourself that are always looking for that next opportunity to get resources in, just so you can take those resources and get them out, and talking a little bit again about the umbrella of democracy, I wanted to ask you, have there been folks, whether elected officials or outside elected officials, that have been especially helpful in terms of what you are trying to accomplish? Because I do think that umbrella of democracy, people working together, unelected, elected, who has helped the Hmong American Center in terms of getting resources, who have done their job, I think, well, to service democracy?
Yeah, so I have to say that specifically for the Hmong American Center here, we have definitely seen relationships with the state government definitely been a lot better. We have definitely seen contributions from elected officials like Governor Tony Evers, who specifically reaches out to the Hmong American Center and the Hmong American community, encouraging them to apply for certain grants in our local state departments as well. Mm-hmm. To be very transparent, obviously in the past here, when I came in as the executive director, the Hmong American Center was on the verge of actually closing down. And it was through working in our communities here with our local partners that we were able to sustain the organization. But it wasn't until 2020, where the pandemic occurred, and also 2021, where we were aware of these resources that were available at the state. Mm-hmm. And when we were aware of them, we began to apply for those services and continue to giving back. And one thing that's very important is that throughout the entire state of Wisconsin, any area where there was a Hmong association that received funding from the state government, local government, etc., we saw that there was an increase in services towards Southeast Asian community, and Southeast Asian communities were actually being served as well too. So we're just very proud of the amazing things that our organizations are able to do because of funding and support from our local funders, state funders, and we're looking forward to continue working with our federal funders to do that as well.
You mentioned other organizations around the state. Do you work a lot with other areas of the state? And maybe just for my education, for others, what other areas of the state have significant Hmong and Southeast Asian communities?
Yeah, so that's a phenomenal question here. So Milwaukee has the most largest population of Southeast Asians or Hmong individuals in the state of Wisconsin here. Wausau is probably in the top three or top two. Madison has a large population. The Fox City has a large population. Eau Claire does as well. But, Wausau, we beat them all per capita. Mm-hmm. So we are we have the largest Hmong population per capita in the country here, from my recollection.
In terms of Wausau, in terms of the Hmong community, do you feel like, I know we got a mayoral election coming up, is the Hmong community listened enough by our local officials?
I think it could always be better. You know, I think our elected officials locally knows that the Southeast Asian community, the Hmong community, is a is the margin of victory locally, statewide as well too. Mm-hmm. Obviously we know that in the previous years, with whether it was the presidential election or governor election, they won by 1% or less than 1%, and the Hmong population makes up about 58,000 of the state of Wisconsin here. So they are a population that definitely has a huge margin of victory, and I think local. Our elected officials are attempting or trying to get to know that, because I get outreaches from the many elected officials in the local area here to meet with the Hmong community. Obviously, I don't do that in the role of my executive director functions, but I do that on my personal role here, trying to get community members connected as well too. And it's not just about being Democrat or Republican, but it's about working together to make sure that people are being practical, making sure that things are happening, results are being delivered, and making sure that everybody get served as well.
Something else I've noticed over the years, we run a Hmong language radio program on Sunday mornings here on this radio station, and from time to time we'll get calls about being on that show in terms of advertising, because there's an economic power now within the Hmong community, isn't there, that people are noticing?
Yes, there definitely is. I was fortunate to attend a conference or symposium, back in October, and they were talking about the buying power in Minnesota. They talked about how it used to be, I believe it was $600 million. Now it's over $2 billion because of the economic and the power, the economic strength, and also the influence that the Southeast Asian community have. We're still trying to gather those influence locally, but I would assume that ours has definitely increased from what it was before as well. But one thing I do have to note is that for the first time in history, the Hmong community's medium household income surpasses the state's average by $10,000 in the state of Wisconsin here as well, too.
What's been the key to that?
Yeah.
Obviously, whenever, no matter what immigrant group comes into our country, it takes time to build from the family unit to the community itself. What's been the key to that? Because that's a very, very interesting number.
Yeah, so I definitely think it has to do with education. Education and also and chasing the entrepreneurial spirit, the American dream. But I think the key to that and the foundation that made this really happen was basically the tenacity and grit of our elders and our parents who built this foundation on. They sacrificed their entire life to make sure that the individuals like myself, the new future generations, are able to build upon it. And they sacrificed going to school to make sure that we're fed so that all of us can go into an education and learn and become successful individuals. So they are the reason why we are successful, because they continue to maintain that steady platform for us to stand on.
Is the Hmong American Center also, you talk about, I think, community. Is it looked at as a place where community is able to continue to be embraced within the Hmong tradition?
Yes. So one of the things we do is we have a huge focus on education, cultural preservation through education. And we do this through efforts like the From Laos to America Museum, where members of the Southeast Asian community can come back and learn about their heritage. But not only that, we also facilitate serve as an area where communities can come and facilitate discussions, dialogues. And we have seen our local clans utilize our space here. Our elders use our space here, the Hmong professionals using our space there, and youth as well too, using our location as well. And we're fortunate to be that organization or that focal point for our community.
We have to go away for about a minute. We're going to come back, maybe talk about the other hats, the issues that you're working on with the county board and also the DC Everest School Board. So we'll come back in about 60 seconds and talk more with Yi Leng Zhang here as we continue on this Wednesday morning. The time is 8:48. Chad Holmes Show, Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Eagle 1490 AM.
Hi, I'm Pete Schwabe, an actor, writer, director, and comedian. Join me for my new show, Nightlight, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll chill after a long day in traffic, talking politics, or trying to look busy at work. We'll talk movies, TV, theater, music, and lots of fun Wisconsin stuff. So mix an old-fashioned and join the discussion. We'll go from Wisconsin to Hollywood and back, and you can still be in bed by 10. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 8 to 10 on Eagle 1490 WLCX.
Do you know or work with kids who have special health care needs? Help them live their best lives. Contact Wisconsin Wayfinder Children's Resource Network. Our specialists will connect you with services in your area. Wisconsin Wayfinder is free and confidential. Call 877-947-2929 or visit dhs.wi.gov/WISCWAY. Connect today. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We end this hour of the Civic Media Spotlight by heading to Matinair on Air, where Jane and Greg speak with Jeff Green, the CEO of Wisconsin Battery Corp.
Good morning, and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board. Very happy to be joined by our guest. He is the CEO of the Wisconsin Battery Company, a company owned by Sustainable Communities Corporation, and they're coming to Portage with plans to make batteries, but this time out of hemp. So, Jeff, you did mention that it's a union shop. It's going to stay a union shop. How many jobs? Right. How many jobs are we talking about ultimately, do you think?
So I think we're going to start up with probably around 50 to 100 in each Fenimore and Portage, if we are able to accomplish that. And then over the next 5 years, we're expecting to ramp up at about 100 a year. So we expect 5 to 600 over the next 6 years.
That's great. These are family sustaining jobs. I think it's really important for people to recognize that.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously technology is moving forward. And so we're trying to stay with the times of making sure that Wisconsin stays a battery state. I mean, the Wisconsin's been a battery state since batteries were created.
I did not know that. We had a long history.
Beyond the cheese.
Beyond the cheese. Back, we're always trying to highlight things in Wisconsin that aren't just dairy products.
Yeah.
I did not know that we had such a long history of batteries in Wisconsin.
And some of the most prolific battery scientists in the world are in Milwaukee.
So we got two questions on our text messaging line, and I want to ask them both. They're kind of this, they're in the same category. One, hemp batteries, are they recyclable? And also, are there any rare earth metals needed to produce hemp batteries?
So we are finalizing our bill of items on all of our batteries right now. So whether or not there's any, you know, sodium, I guess technically is a, you know, is one, but sodium is so massively present right now. It's not anything that we're worried about. But we're trying to eliminate, you know, lithium. We're trying to eliminate graphene. We're trying to eliminate the things that are problematic.
Well, and again, as you mentioned, so, unfortunately, those mines tend to be in countries that are not necessarily friendly to the U.S.
Right. And as far as recyclable goes, we're going to try to actually create a lithium ion recycling plant on the same property. Wow. But right now, you know, Ukraine, I don't know if you know this, but Ukraine was the world leader of fertilizer. And so with the war in Ukraine, fertilizer has actually gone up. I don't know if you've looked at fertilizer lately, but it's doubled in price. And that's not just, you know, Home Depot jacking the price on you. That's Ukraine having some supply chain issues. And so we're looking at ways that we can turn this lithium into fertilizer, because your plants like lithium. And, you know, that's part of the overall big scheme of what we're doing. The outer shell is still going to be metal, and we can recycle that, obviously, but you can recycle anything, but it all has to come down to economics.
Sure. It's got to be cost effective, right?
Right. And Dr. Chu has, our scientist has a method for recycling that prior to Ukraine going into war was not cost effective. Now it is kind of very tightly cost effective, but that's assuming that Ukraine never comes back and becomes, you know, a fertilizer supplier again, and that's not really something that I expect. So I think that it's just a dangerous situation right now that we've got to economically figure out. We want to recycle batteries. That's not, it's certainly within our mission, but making sure that we do it effectively. You know, daycare workers, we're trying to put subsidized daycare in both of our factories as well.
Oh.
Both subsidized daycares and recycling are both non-profitable.
Jeff, that is so wonderful. Subsidized daycare within the facility. And yeah, as you said, it doesn't generate profits. But good heavens, we've been talking about this since 9 to 5 came out. With Dolly
good
Parton
reference.
And Jane good Fonda reference. And Lily Tomlin. I mean, that was a intrinsic part of that movie. And yep, it's 2024 and we're still so far away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important to you to include that, Jeff?
The daycare industry financing fell off a cliff federally over the last year. So what you're finding is young workers, and you know, we are attempting to bring a pension program back into the market as well. So,
whoa,
but
what?
To do a pension, you've got to have a balance of young, middle, and older workers for it to work. And so being able to hire younger workers early in their family, if they don't have daycare that's affordable, yeah, they can't work, or only one of them can work. And that's going to be, you know, counterintuitive to what we're trying to accomplish. So we are also putting together a incubator program for our retirees so that if they want to go out and do something afterwards, they can get educated on how to do that as well. So that's, you know, we want to basically have this as a generational business.
Jane, are you hiring? I'll be up there in like 4 hours.
I was trying to find.
I don't even have children.
I was trying to find a keyword that I could just throw at Jeff and make it sound like I actually know what I'm talking about when it comes to batteries. Oh, nano sheets.
Good job, Jane.
You want to talk carbon nano sheets, Jeff? I'm the guy.
My nano sheets have a thread count of.
If someone is listening and they would like to find out more, or possibly apply for a job, or find out about training opportunities and stuff, Jeff, where should they go?
So our email is work@winbat.co, C-O, and that's where anybody that wants to submit a resume should do.
Okay.
Winbat.co is our website. That's going to be drastically overhauled over the next 6 months, but right now at least it's a 4-pager that keeps all of our media in one place, and you can contact us and find out more about what we're doing. The groundbreaking, obviously, is April 23rd in Portage, and I invite anybody that wants to show up to be there. We're expecting some pretty high-profile political people there.
I would imagine so. Everybody's going to want to claim a piece of this.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm assuming that that Portage has been really open to working with you.
Oh, amazingly so. The mayor, as well as the entire council, have been fabulous to work with. We've got a call tomorrow on the industrial revenue bonds. I don't know if you're familiar with that form of financing, but the city has to approve it. And getting a city to approve a industrial revenue bond is not something that just anybody can do. It's something that they have to believe in and want for their city. And obviously, we got unanimous support a couple weeks ago. So
such exciting news. It's wonderful. And thank you so very much for joining us, Jeff, and explaining a little bit better how this is all going to work. I hope we can have you back on after the groundbreaking.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Jeff Green is the CEO of the Wisconsin Battery Company, coming to Portage and a battery near you. News is coming up next.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Soaring from high above Riverside Park and Granddad's Bluff, this is the talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
Finding the special healthcare resources families need just got easier. Wisconsin Wayfinder, Children's Resource Network, helps kids with delays, disabilities, special health care needs, and mental health conditions. Call toll-free 877-947-2929. Ask questions. Get answers. Connect today toll-free 877-947-2929. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from...